Microphone check. Is this thing really on? We are back. And Janine, it's been a really kind of solemn week for me.
Oh, that doesn't sound positive.
I know. I had two deaths. My uncle passed and
my uncle passed.
Yeah, my oldest uncle. So he was like,
you really aren't much of a sharer.
It's on Instagram. Okay. Hello. he passed. My oldest uncle, he's my father's oldest brother. He was in his 80s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
nothing that makes it better. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I know,
oh, okay.
Yes. But. So my father's taking it hard. But I also it was a real tragic death that just happened recently with Rasul Butler and Leah LaBelle. So Rasul Butler is an NBA player. If you guys are familiar with him, you're basketball fans. And Leah LaBelle, she was a singer. I think she was an RCA, and she also was on American Idol. So a lot of people, she has a pretty huge fan base. And they died tragically. He was in his Range Rover. And they say he lost control of his car. He was speeding, lost control of his car, crashed into a meter, and it died on impact, right? And
that just sounds insane.
And the car looks crazy, you know? And I mean, he's 38. He's 38. And I mean, my dealings with Rasul, I lived in Philly for a while, and when All-Star was in LA a few years ago, I did a dinner with Dr. J and with Russell Simmons. And it was kind of like this mentorship dinner. And we had invited some players and some different celebrities who were in town for the All-Star weekend. So my boyfriend at the time was really good friends with Rasul. And we needed more celebrities. And he said, yo, you know, my girl's having something. Can you come through and support her? And he came through with Katina Mobley. And he was just so positive. You know, when you meet someone who just has like a really good spirit, he was just really positive. He was like, he didn't never met me. You know, this was his first time. He's like, yeah, tell, give me a call. I hit him up. He's like, oh, no, anything for you. And no problem.
What did he play for?
He's played for several different teams.
I think at the time that you knew him.
I think he was playing in LA at that time.
Okay.
So it's just crazy because, you know, he's a person that we only had one interaction, but he was that.
He made a lasting
impression. Yeah, he made a lasting impression. And that's Miss Gina Smith, who we have in the building talking. But I'll get to her. But he made such a lasting impression because he was just very positive. He was just really cool. And, you know, he was like, thank you for inviting me. Like, I really had a good time. He's like, you know, because Doc and Russell really were talking some inspirational stuff and giving him some wisdom to players, you know, and even about building wealth and money. So he was really appreciative. And it's crazy because his number kind of popped up in my phone probably like last week. And I just kind of remembered, you know, like our interaction. And then, you know, fast forward a week later, this happens. And it's really crazy. And it's very devastating because a lot of people in Philadelphia are really, really sad. I'm just probably in LA, just anybody he was in contact with was sad. And they said his wife, Leah LaBelle, was a really good person as well. So, and he was really happy. So, you know, it's just sad to have two young people just die like that.
Do you know if they had kids?
I have to say, I was going to ask if they had any children, because this is, I think the marriage is pretty new. So anyway, we have Miss Gina Smith in the building to talk about some of these things, because we don't know if their affairs were in order, right? And, you know, we've seen different celebrities die, and like Prince, and his estate just...
It went to no
mess.
A mess. Then you have all these people, because that's what's happening with my uncle now.
Yeah.
Right? Really? With my uncle, because he has two, he had his first wife and his second wife.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah.
And he
right?
divorced both.
Children from both.
He's with the second wife.
Okay.
Children with both.
Yeah, they got in court for a while.
Yeah, it gets messy. Right? It gets messy because, you know, because he was suffering from Alzheimer's. So even when he was going through that, his older children had problems with the care and, you know, all that other stuff that was going on. So now when it becomes, you know, when you're dealing with death and assets and stuff, it gets really messy.
It does.
So, I mean, tell us a little about yourself, and then, you know, let's get into how we sort out this mess, or even, right. you know, prevent yeah. it from even happening. Well,
so my name is Attorney Gina Smith. I've been practicing law for 15 years now. I've mostly worked in government and nonprofit agencies, but I'm tired of that. And so now I've launched my solo law practice. And I have decided to make estate planning a cornerstone of my practice. And I've done it for two reasons, is that I figured if I was going to have my own business, I wanted it to be something that I was passionate about and that I enjoyed. And when I was, I had done some private practice before, and I handled some probate matters. So that's how I know how the court system is going to be a challenge for that family. And so we hear of these things all the time. And it was important for me to provide a service to the community that's lacking. And in the African-American community in particular, we don't engage in estate planning. For some reason, we got a real knowledge gap and cultural aversion to talking about wills and living trust and things like that. And so I'm always happy to have the conversation with you. Mm-hmm. You touched on a number of different topics. I think we typically think of estate planning as something that happens after a person dies, but had this person had a complete estate plan, as his family was dealing with Alzheimer's, it would have been easier for them to navigate the process if he had done some pre-planning and put some things in place.
Or maybe even to take it one step further, before he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, right. because by that point, it's too late. His mind was kind of already gone, so they didn't know what his wishes were.
Right, so he didn't have what we would call testamentary capacity.
Okay.
So you have to have basically be of sound mind to do a will or a living trust or something like that. So by the time that he had Alzheimer's, even if he knew prior to his mental capacities declining, even if he did a will, and because there are these battling kids, they probably would have been fighting over whether or not that's what he really meant to do, or whether he was under undue influence, and they would have been able to say he didn't have testamentary capacity at the time that he made the will, and it could be thrown out.
So what is the difference? Is there a difference between a living will and a living trust, or is it the same thing?
Different parts of the country speak of them differently. So a living trust is actually a very popular tool now. Like, people like to have a living trust instead of a will. In some parts of the country, a living will refers to you outlining what you want to happen should you become ill. So if you're physically ill and unable to care for yourself, and you're mentally incapacitated, you get to say, I do or don't want to be on life support.
Okay.
I do want pain management, or don't prolong my life forever. So they're definitely not the same. Some states call them healthcare directives. Other states call them living wills.
So it's not so much as financial.
No, not when we're talking about the living will or the healthcare directive. The living trust is a document that can be used in conjunction with or instead of a will for you to lay out what you want to happen. The biggest distinction between the two is that a will has to go through probate court. If you do a living trust correctly, you don't have to enter the court at all. But living trusts are tricky. They're not as simple as people think they are.
So I have a friend, parents, right? They have a lot of assets, right? Millions of dollars in assets. And they were like, they don't want a building that they have, which is, you know, worth millions of dollars. And they have about four kids and 10 grandchildren. So they were talking about putting the building in a trust, so it just can't be sold. It can't be sold. They don't want their kids to be like, oh, you know, mommy and daddy are gone, let's sell this building and cash out.
So a living trust is a document that's what we call irrevocable. So, and the thing, it's called living because as long as you're alive, you can change it and switch it around, move assets in and out. What they're talking about is creating an irrevocable trust. And oftentimes lawyers refer to it as a legacy trust. So they want to use that building that probably has a ton of equity in it to put it into trust and to create income and a legacy for their grandchildren.
Yes.
And by it not being able to, once it's created as an irrevocable trust, you really can't break the trust and get to the asset. And so it's a great way for them to make sure. It does a number of different things for the children. It preserves that wealth for generations to come. Depending on who they have administering the trust, they can give very succinct directions about what can and cannot happen to the property and the income that it throws off. And then it can also be a tax avoidance tool for families as well, so that say, for instance, if the parents of these children sold the building, it would be a tax creating event for the family. And so some of the equity would be lost in the sale of the building. But by putting it in this trust, it preserves the property. It leaves a legacy. And for as long as it's in the trust, there are no taxes to be paid on it other than a property tax.
So speaking from someone who has not done estate planning, right? And so, well, I'll rewind some. My dad did. Right? He has. And he has like an entire will in his words. And he wants to have a meeting with all of us because it's five of us. And he's going to explain, you know, these are my wishes, but I don't want you guys to be surprised and blah, 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 blah. My mom, on the other hand, is like, oh, well, I have, what is it called? POA? POD. Pay on death? Was it? Is that, am I saying that correctly?
Well, it's two different things. So pay on death would be a type of insurance policy.
No, it's not insurance.
Power of attorney.
No. So like on her bank statements, it'll say, okay. And it's basically like, you know, this is my wishes. Anything in my account goes to you. And then she did a separate document that says basically her house goes to me. And she felt like, you know, she doesn't have a lot of assets. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessary to go through the process of all of that to leave to me. And I'm like, Mom, that doesn't really sound right. Okay. I'm pretty sure we should organize this a little bit better.
You
right?
should. Okay, so what she's done is she's created what's called joint tenancy.
Okay.
So she's put you on the accounts, or she's named you as a beneficiary of the accounts. And that's, in the hood, that's what folk like
that's
to do.
That's what people do. Right.
That's the hood shortcut to an estate plan. And it all looks good on papers. Like, I don't have to think about death, and I don't have to go pay a lawyer to do this for me, but it has some problems. And what the biggest problem is that joint tenancy is just that. So you own, if she's put you on title to the house, like you own the house with her now.
Okay.
If you recently married, right? If you
Recently,
unfortunately,
but...
so this is just a hypothetical, but it's for dramatic effect. I'm going to use this. If you found yourself in a divorce proceeding, your mother's house would be considered community asset. Property.
Yep. With that,
so your
now that's messy.
That's messy. And that, I call it the perils of joint tenancy. Like, it looks like a shortcut. It looks like you're getting around the legal fees and stuff like that. Or if you file bankruptcy.
Okay.
They would do a title. They would do a search of public records and see what your name popped up on. And so the bank accounts and things that you are on now will all be assets that the bankruptcy court or the divorce court.
Really?
Or say you got into a lawsuit with someone and they wanted to attach. You said, I ain't got no money. They like, oh, but we done a public record search and you own this house, or you own half of the value of the house. It would be subject to attachment of the judgment. So it has problems. And like.
So let me ask you this. Let's say that it's not, I'm not on the title and it's not joint, and she, God forbid, just passes. What happens to the house? Who takes it? The state?
If your father is still living, a portion of it will go to your father and the rest of it will be divided among the children.
Well, I'm an only child for my mother.
Oh. Well, yeah, it would likely just all go to you and her husband. So it varies state by state. But what you're talking about when you die without a will or a living trust is called intestate.
Okay.
And so each state comes up with a set of rules that they apply to these intestacy situations. The problem is you're going to be in probate court. It costs money to go into court, depending on how sophisticated you are, whether you want to be bothered with, you got to pay attorney's fees. You might have to post a bond. Some courts make that a credit dependent situation, like whether or not you can get a bond or how much it costs depends on your credit worthiness. And then it's a long process. And like, folks seem real cool with just deferring to the probate process. But what I like for everyone to understand is that we think of it as a means for heirs to take property or for the court to pass property to an heir, it's not just that. It's also about making sure that creditors get paid. Mm-hmm. And they get priority. Mm-hmm. So they get paid before the heirs are
so
able to take
anything. So all your Capital One credit card, Bank of America.
And so probate court requires you to do what they call a notice and publication period. So you have to put something in a legal journal that says this is the state of Jane Doe. If you got a claim, post it with the court. Or you have, if you know of like Capital One or whomever, mm-hmm. you're supposed to give notice to them and give them the opportunity to make a claim against a probate estate. And so it can get ugly.
Well, that's so, you know, there's two things that I always find, you know, crazy. So you usually have a married couple. And you know, sometimes when people are younger, they're not thinking of wills. Mm-hmm. They're not thinking of mm-hmm. death. And you know, the husband is the breadwinner and the business is going well, and then he passes. Mm-hmm. Right? And then there's no plan.
Exactly.
And the woman doesn't know how to run the business, you know, necessarily, because mm-hmm. I know one of my friends, how she got into owning her Smoothie King was the fact that the widow didn't know how to run the business. So she, you know, she was able to buy into the business and help the widow and then eventually buy her out because she didn't really want to be bothered. But it becomes a problem because all of a sudden you're living this lifestyle and then he passes. And what happens to your lifestyle?
So let me get my thoughts organized. Mm-hmm. If you're a business owner and so you have property or you have a profitable business, one thing you should include in your estate plan is a succession plan. And so you talk about, like, you should know whether or not your spouse has the ability to run that business or whether they have the desire to. And if they don't, then you can say, you know, at the time that I pass away, I want the business so liquidated, whatever, you know. But oftentimes what happens in families like this is that somebody thinks they can run the business and they run it into the ground.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. So. Guess who won't be? I wouldn't even set myself up. I'd be like, mental health, what?
Yeah, so I call, when I do estate plans, I do several documents. I call them a wraparound cradle to grave type plan. I plan for in the event that you become seriously ill or injured or mentally incapacitated, which is real because we got so many people, you know, with the aging baby boomer population, Alzheimer's, dementia's at, you know, epidemic proportions. But then I also do the afterlife planning. And so I like to say it's a family protection plan. It puts protections and documents in place for if you become seriously ill. Like, y'all know about HIPAA. Like, can't nobody, doctors can't hardly share any information with anyone. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have the living will, the healthcare directive, you're limited in what the doctors can share with your family members.
Even in death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like now you want a document that gives you those HIPAA waivers and names an agent who can handle those affairs for you. And then you also, of course, want to have a plan for who's going to get your stuff after you pass away. So
I find that in our community, people are most afraid of it because they feel like it costs this astronomical amount of money. Mm-hmm. I do understand that it is situational based, but just generally, how much does it cost to write a will or to plan your estate?
And I think everyone should have a will. And so, but if you don't have a lot, like you can, like, it ain't nothing wrong with going to LegalZoom and doing a little questionnaire.
LegalZoom. I love LegalZoom.
You could do LegalZoom, you could get a basic will for $250, right? Mm-hmm. But if you have more assets than that and you have like the family that you mentioned, like they know exactly what they want to do. They want to make sure that they leave something in perpetuity for their grandchildren. LegalZoom is likely not going to get mm-hmm. you there. So you can have, you know, a $250 will to, if you like got a really complicated estate, it can cost, you know, a few thousand dollars. Okay. But it is very situational.
Yeah, but it's better to do that than be
here's the thing
asked like, out. Like
the average, you know, the average probate matter, unless it's a very simple small estate, can take up to a year or more, and it averages about $10,000 in legal fees and all the other stuff. So do you want to spend maybe a grand for a complete estate plan? preserve what you have for your family, or do you want them to be tied up in court, fighting each other, possibly losing, you know, property to tax sales and all that other nonsense that happens? You know, it's a value proposition. Which one do you pay a little bit up front to protect things long term, or do you let it ride and then not know what the outcome will be?
Mm-hmm. And another issue with our beautiful community is is when the funeral comes, right?
Oh God.
And you got them online.
I'm so tired trying, of seeing funeral GoFundMe.
Yeah, campaigns. GoFundMe campaigns.
I thought it was just me.
Oh my God, I roll my eyes.
And people are just not prepared, you know. And you're just like, what? You know, so, what are some other ways that people can avoid this?
So you can do something as simple as a burial policy, right? I'm old enough to remember when my grandparents had North Carolina mutual insurance policies and a little man used to come around each month to collect the fee. Like, a simple policy like that will keep you from having to go to GoFundMe or social media to pay for your loved one's burial, right? Like, this is something crazy about that. Like, what? And what did we do before there was GoFundMe? Like, what?
Borrow money,
but... it's preventable. Like, a little bit of preparation, a little bit of pre-planning will make everything much smoother and easier on your family.
So also with the children, mm-hmm. right? So, for instance, with this tragic situation with this couple passing, right? You don't know. You could be driving with your husband and something may happen with your, with both of you passing away.
Right.
What happens if there's nothing in place of who gets custody of your children?
Mm. Very good question. Most people don't think about this. So, based on the fact that this guy was a basketball player, I'm going to assume that he had something and he likely had an insurance policy, right? If they have minor children, those kids can't take the proceeds of that insurance policy. You have to be at least 18 to get that payout. So you have to have a legal guardian appointed to care for the children, what they call their person, as well as to manage the property. And so it depends if there's a family member that wants to step up and do that, unless they are named in some document like your will or your living trust. This is who I want to be the guardian of my children, and they can have full access to the insurance policies and things like that. The court's going to be involved in that process. It's another probate proceeding. It's called guardianship or conservatorship. And again, it's attorney's fees, it's running back and forth to court. And as long as that kid is under 18, that legal guardian has a duty to come into court on a periodic basis and do an accounting and reporting to what they've done, how they spent the funds, and things like that. So again, a little bit of forethought, in our community in particular, we're accustomed to auntie or whoever kind of just like stepping in and taking care of
grandma
the kids.
Takes
and
the kids.
But what if the grandma's sick?
Right, or they can take care of the grandchildren in terms of their person. The court may or may not decide that they're capable of handing a $500,000 insurance policy, and they might, you know, appoint an independent guardian to take care of the property that the kid was left with. So,
what if parents are fighting over the custody? Is that another situation?
Yeah, absolutely. They're in court. So the standard that the courts apply when they, like in a divorce, just like, and they'll do the same thing in the probate proceeding, is like, what's in the best interest of the child? So they will turn you inside out. They will question.
Chris's mom against your mom.
Right.
There's going to be, you know, a court appointed person that will interview you, ask you questions, and make a determination as to, is it in the best interest of these children for these children to live with this person?
So, but okay, what initially happens though? So there's a death, right? Mm-hmm. Both parents, it's tragic. What happens? Does the person come in and put them somewhere else before someone steps up? Or
I mean, I think it's not uncommon for family members to step forward and say that they can live with me. But of course, they're going to need a way to support these children and to provide for their well-being. And so that's when you get to, well, who's going to get the proceeds of the estate? So whether it's the bank accounts or the insurance policies.
So then that's where the grandparents be like,
right.
I want.
So the bank ain't just going to give auntie the balance of the bank account, right? Mm-hmm. That would be, they can't. Legally, they cannot. And if the children are named as the beneficiaries of the insurance policy, the insurance company is not going to issue that check to auntie or grandma.
So
you're going to have to go get a court order saying, I've been appointed temporary or permanent guardian, and I have the authority over the kid's person and property, and you can release those funds to me.
Which is a whole additional step
right
in the process.
Yep. And in the meantime, you're trying to provide for the kids, and you may not have the financial means to really to do it. Yeah.
So on a more personal level, like, how did this become your passion or your specialty? Like, how do you just say, like, obviously you weren't a 5-year-old and woke up and said, I want to play in the States. I want to be an estate planner. I mean, how does someone get on the path?
Because if you sit in a probate courtroom, it's drama. Okay.
Oh, yeah, no.
Like,
family law.
Family law in general is drama. It's lots of it. And so, I've worked in community development for a long time, and I'm really interested in how Black people can do better about, you know, creating and maintaining wealth. And we piss away a whole bunch of wealth.
Don't we?
By not spending $250,000 on a will.
Yeah.
Like, and so, I wanted to do something that I knew would be impactful, that would allow me to work with families in a meaningful way. Like, I have no desire to do mindless litigation where you're like fighting each other over technicalities in the law or nuances and things like that. Like, I wanted to do something impactful that will really be of service to people. And when I did do probate matters, like I got gratification out the process. I just executed a will package over the weekend with a family, and I just like the interaction with them and knowing that I've done something that really will give them peace of mind, give them a way to preserve their wealth and leave a legacy.
What are some common mistakes you see?
Joint tenancy. That's the most common. Another big one is that as parents or loved ones get older, they don't have no problem with giving that durable power of attorney, right? I call it the almighty durable power of attorney, because you basically, depending on whether or not you tailor that thing and narrow it, the person that has that piece of paper can do anything with your property. So you have situations where you have aging parents, kids know it's, you know, $50,000 in equity sitting in the house. Mama don't need all that, but I do. I need a new car, whatever. They use that power of attorney, take out a line of credit or reverse mortgage on the house, and then it's gone.
Yeah.
So that document is abused all the time. And so that's another big mistake. But the biggest mistake is doing nothing. So 70% of African-American families don't have a will, and that's at all income levels. Like, we just don't do it. And I think part of it is historically,
we're not educated.
We haven't had to think about it, right? Like, we've only since the 60s have we even had the right to really own property. And so we don't really think about, well, how do we pass it on, and how do we create wealth for one another? But like, the reason that the rest of the population is so far ahead of us in terms of accumulating wealth is because they've been passing it on for generations longer than us.
And
very few people who pull themselves up from their bootstraps.
Exactly. By age 18, their parents are already talking to them about, okay, this was our will, and now we're passing it on to you, and you can figure it out. Meanwhile, a lot of us in our age group are first generation. So our parents never even thought to have a will because they didn't feel like they had anything.
Yeah, it's twofold. It's lack of knowledge. And then some of it is like just that sober conversation of facing your mortality.
So what is the whole common wife situation?
I'm sure
there's a lot of people out there.
Well, you're not married, but you've been together.
You've been together for years. So common law spouse has provided for you in a planning document or put you on insurance policy, you got nothing coming. And that happens. Now, that's something you see in the probate court all the time.
That's what I said. I know that's a big one.
You see that all the time.
I can imagine. We've been together for 10 years, but not married. And you
20,
didn't put
30 years.
20, 30. Or how about the man that never officially divorced
his wife?
The first wife.
Yeah.
She get it.
Yeah.
Because she's the legal wife.
Yeah.
it, common law wife is just booty out. I'm not going to use profanity.
So, okay, what about the guys who have, or, you know, women who may have different kids with different people, and the person passes, they're the breadwinner, what happens?
So all those kids are heirs.
What if they're minors?
Same.
Yeah, okay, they're all heirs,
scenario,
yes.
Same scenario we talked about. So if there's something for them to inherit from Papa the Rolling Stone.
It's split, basically?
It will get split between them, but if they're minors, there's still the issue of who's...
So then the
who's going to take the property?
Two baby mamas are in court battling out who is more capable of managing the money.
Well, so if they're if it's two different mothers and they have each have an individual child, then they're going to want they're going to petition the court to, you know, be the recipient on behalf of their children, and then the court would determine whether or not they trust them to do that.
I have a friend. Well, we're not friends anymore. It was in high school, but the dad passed away when one child was two, and then the other mother was pregnant at the time. They didn't know about each other. So identically, they had the same name. I won't put the real name on it, but let's just say John. John was two. The mother was pregnant with baby John. When baby John was born, it was around the same time the father was murdered. She took John number one, social security number, used it for her child, took all the money. Right?
Fraud.
Mm.
That's fraud. Criminal fraud.
Mothers didn't know any better, didn't do anything. There was no will. All of the money went to the baby John. And then there was nothing left for, you know, I mean, things like that.
Happen.
They all, do happen.
They happen all
but
the time.
But had he had planned it, I mean, I guess she could have, it would have been harder, I guess, for say, for her to have taken the social security number of the other baby.
But I've also seen the issue with the mother and the wife. If there is no nothing in place and that business and that assets are there, it becomes a problem sometimes between his mom, you know, and the wife.
I'll share. So from on a personal level, I have a cousin who's like my best friend. And her two biological parents divorced. Her dad married my aunt. Her mother married a different man. Tragically, this dude committed homicide.
Which dude?
The second husband.
Okay.
Her mother's second husband.
Okay.
Unfortunately, there are a lot of cops that have serious problems. He killed her and then committed suicide. He had children from a previous marriage. They ended up in a court battle over who was, and this is what's really screwed up. So they literally had to determine who passed away first, right? Because in terms of what would have passed to who was determined by who passed first. So if her mother had passed first, then her mother's portion of her mother's estate would have gone to him. And then his kids could have been the sole heirs of the property. Like,
wow.
And this real life.
So this is down to the autopsy. Because he might have shot her and killed himself, but she was still breathing.
Right.
Sorry, gotcha. Okay.
That's crazy.
He ended up predeceasing her. He had a baby's mama who was expecting at the time as well. So I got real life experience with this.
Goodness.
So she's coming forward, like, but I got this baby. And so he mess. So I can say that I, you know, witnessed that on an up close and personal basis.
What was the outcome?
I'm curious too. What happened? Like,
dun, dun, dun.
She cut a deal. So he was a policeman, and so he had a pension. She was like, take his pension, and I won't make a claim against the pension, but give me my mama's house and give me everything else. And so that's how it worked out. But that's real. And so this cousin of mine is like, I want all my in order. Like,
yeah, because it gets that technical,
right?
And it
now,
gets
because she's on a second marriage now too, and she got two different.
Yeah,
because
what happens is people think, oh, we're happy now.
Right.
They don't realize what could happen in 10 years, five years.
Imagine her position. She's already like emotionally distraught, just barely holding on because she lost her mother in such a tragic way. But in the meantime, you're going to court.
Fighting all of these folks
to just hold on to what your mother intended for you to have.
I forgot what my question is. I mean, this thing is throwing me all the way for the loop. I had a whole good question.
Well, yeah, I mean, my thing is that, you know, people don't plan ahead. You know, they think they're in love now. Everything's happy, hunky-dory now, and have no idea what's coming around the corner.
I remember now. Okay. I remember. Do you want to finish?
No, go ahead.
So let's say you have a will written, and then you, God forbid, you divorce. I guess you now go in and you edit that will. However, the edits in that will, if you don't have a new spouse, I mean, you don't per se know who to leave it to. I mean, I guess it gets tricky.
It does.
So when you divorce, you have to go and edit your will.
Yes. So
and some people don't do it.
If I do a divorce, post-divorce, I'm going to tell my client, if you had any insurance policy, bank accounts, property, whatever that had that spouse's name on it, take it off. Because here's the thing, like, so your insurance policies, that trumps what's in the will even. So if you have named Joe Blow as your beneficiary of insurance policy while you were married and you forgot to change it after you divorced, Joe Blow is still going to get the proceeds of that insurance policy.
Okay.
But even, doesn't also something with Social Security with divorce, I mean, and if the person never got married again, do they still get a...
It depends on how long they were married.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay, so what are the ages?
I don't quite know about that.
Because I know my father... I know my father's entitled.
Tell that family. Your family stories are good.
I got drama filled. Everybody got drama filled family. So my grandmother was my grandfather's first of three wives.
Oh.
But they took a long time before... And he had... you know, several other marriages, several sets of children. It took a long time before they got officially divorced. My grandmama got some of his Social Security.
I think my dad's entitled to some. I think my dad's gonna get some of my mom's Social Security too.
And vice versa. I don't want to give a wrong number because
I think it's because I mean they were married for 16 years, so I think.
I mean, because she stopped that now at this point, or. Because Sanjay's mom say, wait a minute, I know that we've been married for a long time and he's entitled. Is there anything she could do to stop him from getting it?
No, that's just
the
law.
It just is what it is.
No, unfortunately.
Yes, it's a certain amount of years and it's just like you just automatically, you automatically get it. But I mean, this has been really informative. And I said, I wanted to do this because I was at a seminar and they started talking about it and I started thinking about my own mortality. And my mom's been on me about... Mm-hmm. Will, because she has a will and she has certain things in place for my sister and I.
Good.
When things, you know, if anything happens to her with the houses, you know, everything will be paid off. And she just has that all written in her will. So we're not left with any type of debt. You know, with my business, she's just like, you know, you have to make sure. And I've been on my financial planner about sitting down and writing that out, because that is also important. Like, who does my business go to? All of that profit, you know, things and assets, my mutual funds, all that stuff.
I'm glad you're thinking about it.
Yes. All that stuff. I mean, yeah, because you have to be smart, because my friends have their wills. They have kids, you know, they have kids.
Really,
like, come on, you get on top of it.
Get on it. Don't take. I had a friend, perfectly good, healthy guy, unexpectedly fall out from a major stroke.
Yeah,
like, he lived. He survived. But imagine what that does to the family.
Yeah.
Like, if you just, it doesn't take that much. For
Nothing.
Most of us, we don't have enough assets for it to be, you know, a $3,000 or $4,000 will package. Mm-hmm. Those do exist. Most of us don't have that much. But just to put the basic protections in place, just to put the basic precautions in place, doesn't take a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, I've seen, you know, just within probably the last 10-15 years, I've seen a lot of young widows.
Yeah.
A lot of young widows, and they were not prepared, and they were left devastated because their husbands didn't have anything in place for them.
And I want to send a special word to single people. Don't think that because you're single and maybe don't have any kids that it's nothing that you need to be concerned about. Like, if you're a young, you know, a young professional that's like really making it happen, like, do you really want your wealth to just be like pilfered away,
like, to just go to the state.
Right. Like, wouldn't it be better, even if you don't have any children, to leave something to your nieces and nephews so that they have a legacy, so that they can get a leg up or something like that? And then also what we talked about earlier about like the healthcare directive and the power of attorney documents. If you became really ill, who can step in and handle your stuff for you? Like, you don't have a spouse who could even do that. Like, if you were in a bad accident, who's going to be there and have the legal authority to step in and take care of things for you?
Well, Sanjay, if you need anyone, I know you're single. I don't mind being a beneficiary. If you want to leave anything to me,
you got it, billion. No, but thank you for joining us. I thought this was really, really, really important to share, especially with our audience, because there's things we don't think about, and we're tired of the GoFundMe funeral fund. So we gotta make sure that we are on top of this, because I mean, those policies aren't even that much money for a funeral policy, because you know, a funeral is gonna be $7,000-$8,000,
and it's less than $20 a month.
Yeah, it's like something really minor just to have it just in place, so you don't go, you know, in the hole trying to provide something for your mother and not having a tombstone, you know, all the stuff that you have to do to prepare, because especially when you're not you're emotionally distraught, and now you got to find some money that you don't have.
So that's the other thing about like the whole probate court proceeding is, like, again, you have people who are grieving, and you know, they're having to go to court and fight. Nobody wants to be in that position.
I wouldn't want to. I mean, you're dealing with enough as it is. And to think that now you have to worry about where the money goes and where. Actually, I have an uncle who, he knew he was sick, and he knew that he was passing, but he didn't tell any of us. And he lived here in Baltimore. He's my mom's brother, and none of my mom's family lived here. So she said that, you know, he randomly asked her to come over and was getting her to sign these papers, and she noticed that he was making her a beneficiary to a lot of things, but he just didn't have enough time, and he passed quicker than he thought. When it happened, she was beneficiary for most of his policies because he worked for the government, but there were a lot of things that went undone, and it was a lot of court proceedings. And luckily for my mom's side of the family, they're very close, so everybody opted, let my mom handle everything, and we know that once she gets everything settled, she'll divide it amongst all of us, and she did, but it took time.
That's not our family, so unfortunately
it's not. And it also took a lot of time, and she had to fight a lot of the debt collectors and just all of the medical bills he had. Like, they wanted their peace, and it was a lot for her to have to deal with.
It is.
And especially for him to have not even said, "I'm sick." She didn't know it was coming. You know, it, unexpectedly, it's like, whoa, now I have this hole. But at least he did something. There are some families that do nothing at all.
I'm the oldest of six, and I'm part of a blended family. And so, like, I tell my parents are probably, you know, a little bit better off than most. So I'm like, don't leave no mess for us. I do not want to be, you know, having the Brady Bunch battle or anything like that. Like, and I know, like, I recall when my parents originally did a will, but their financial situation is entirely different. It's like, you gotta, like, update it.
Right.
So, but my mom and my dad are fighting because my mom wants to get it done and my daddy don't want to talk about it.
and that is the thing, because men
don't like
they
it.
Don't want to talk
they
about
don't
it
talk
they
about
don't
it.
Want to plan
no. They don't.
And it becomes a problem because they, you know, they don't want to think about their own mortality, and it's like, how do you get past that? What do you do? Because
so you don't have to do a joint plan with your spouse.
Okay,
that's what I told my mother. I was like, well, let's do it without them.
We're gonna just do yours.
I was like, because my mother has very specific ideas about what she wants to accomplish, and they may or may not jive what my father wants to do. I was like, you don't have to do it with him. And it's really complicated to do those joint packages like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, depending on your family structure, it may make sense for each of you to have a, you know, a separate plan.
I'm telling you now, I mean, when I go home tonight, I'm like, babe, you know what our podcast tonight was about? We need to figure this out. And I guarantee he's going to be like, do we got to talk about this tonight? And then when I bring it up tomorrow, he's going to say, you're overwhelming me. And then when I bring it up next week, all right, we're going to get it done. So I might be hitting you up to just do my own private one.
Here's the thing. Like, so it's a lot to think about. And most people don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
So like I have a little like ebook that's like 10 steps to getting started. And good. It kind of like
good.
Walks you through like before, this is how you get yourself organized for it. Like these are the documents that you need to think about. Who do you want? Who do you trust to handle your affairs? All those sorts of things. So that's where you start. Like start to like, you know, just like use a guide like that.
And is there somewhere where people can access your ebook?
AttorneyGSmith.com.
Okay.
Say it again. Say it again.
AttorneyGSmith.com.
And if you don't mind, we'll take AttorneyGSmith.com and we'll link it to TP the Mag. And
great.
It'll be another resource for people to know, hey, if you need to know the beginning steps to estate planning. Sorry. No, mm-hmm. You're fine. To estate planning, you know, let's start here.
Because if you've never had the conversation and you've never heard of all these documents, this is overwhelming. So I have that little ebook to mm-hmm. just help people. It's like a little workbook.
Makes sense.
10 pages or less.
I could say, I could probably name 10 friends, and out of those 10 friends, probably none of them have a will. Yeah. Honestly.
Oh, I know.
I could imagine. We have time to get it done.
I can imagine.
Like these, the couple that you mentioned at the top
young,
of the podcast,
right?
They probably thought, we don't need that. And that's another thing. We're like, we're not old. We don't need that.
Yep.
Tragedies happen every day.
All the time. Absolutely. You never know. So thank you so much again for joining us. And a big shout out to our WCW, Dolores Sanchez. She's another attorney, a lobbyist. And she's amazing. She was on the cover of this month's Daily Record.
I was so January's. Impressed.
Yeah.
I mean, so impressed. And Sanjay did the interview. And as I was reading through it, I was like, wow. And all I kept saying was, wow.
Really, really dope. And, you know, I said, we always try to mm-hmm. highlight women in different industries and people. Some people don't know what a lobbyist is and what she does. And mm-hmm. and I'm glad that we were able to kind of shine a light and let people know that, hey, you know, we need more voices, especially Black women voices.
Absolutely.
Fighting for different causes. So
yes,
make sure you check that out on tpthemag.com. And also make sure you get your tickets for the couples thing that's coming up, right?
February 10th, it is Relationship Goals Live Podcast. Make sure you're there because we only have about 10 tickets left.
Ooh, so if
you want to come, you might want to hurry up and get on it because they are running out quick. And remember, people are buying them as couples. So even though it's 10 tickets, they're going by the twos.
All right. See you guys later.
Have a good one.
Thanks for having me.